Good afternoon. Thank you very much for coming. High Commissioner will make just a short few opening words to start with, and then we'll open the floor to questions.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much for coming. Before you attack me, let me begin by apologizing, because I realize that actually this is the first time this year that I'm meeting with you. It's just not something that I'd plan, and so I promise to make it up next year, because there's no point in saying media are our partners and then I don't come and meet with you. So please accept that apology. So I thought I'll make a brief statement, which is that when it comes to human rights, we sometimes forget how much we owe to others, the hundreds of thousands of unsung heroes known as human rights defenders. They have changed the course of history, tackling injustice and discrimination wherever they find it. The great majority are unknown to the world at large. In fact, had it not been for the media publishing names, the greater part of the world would not know about these actors. Now, while combating discrimination and other important human rights causes, they themselves are often subject to discrimination. In fact, every year, thousands of human rights defenders are harassed, abused, unjustly detained, and even murdered. Often their families are targeted as well. This is why this year, Human Rights Day, is dedicated to human rights defenders and their magnificent struggle to stop discrimination. In my press statement on Human Rights Day, which was issued earlier yesterday, I mentioned two of the most prominent human rights activists who have been murdered recently. I would now like to pay tribute to several others. Natalia Esther Mirova of the prominent Russian NGO Memorial, who was kidnapped in Grozny and then murdered in July 2009. I have raised questions about the investigation and trial of suspects. Rogelio Martinez, member of a Colombian NGO that acts on behalf of people whose land has been stolen by paramilitaries, who was assassinated on 18th May this year by a group of hooded men. Gennady Pavluk, a campaigning Kyrgyz journalist who died after falling from a high-rise building in Almaty with his hands and legs bound 1 year ago in December 2009. And I would like to express my deep sorrow on the death of Emilia Kwan, who was abducted on Tuesday this week and then found dead just yesterday in Guatemala. She was a sociologist and researcher for an NGO promoting human rights through social, cultural, economic, and political research. So sadly, these are only a very few of those who have been killed for standing up for human rights of others. I would like to end on a more positive note. After many years under house arrest, Aung San Suu Kyi was finally released a month ago. She's, I think, a shining case of someone who has led by example, calmly and resolutely standing up for her principles. Her release, for which many human rights defenders have campaigned ceaselessly for many years, gives us all hope. She has very kindly agreed to record a short video message for us, which will be screened tomorrow at our Human Rights Day event here in Geneva, which is honoring the efforts of grassroots human rights defenders all over the world. I do hope that you will join us at that event. We need to stand up strongly for the rights of human rights defenders, so that they can continue to stand up for our rights. So I will now try to answer any questions you may have, especially if they relate to human rights defenders and discrimination, which is the theme we are focusing on for Human Rights Day. Thank you.
Frank?
Good afternoon. Frank Jordans from the AP. You mentioned the human rights defenders, and there is one who's going to be honored tomorrow, and I'd like to ask you about his case. This is Liu Xiaobo. Apologies if I don't pronounce his name completely correctly. He's getting the Nobel Peace Prize in Oslo, and I'm wondering what you think of China's campaign to organize a boycott of the ceremony. And if I may, a second question on rights defenders in the broader sense. The WikiLeaks has also been in the news a lot. They call themselves human rights defenders. And I'm wondering whether you think that outlets such as WikiLeaks deserve the same kind of whistleblower protection that journalists enjoy in many democratic countries, particularly when they uncover human rights abuses. You've mentioned them in the context of possible human rights abuses in Iraq, so I assume that you consider them to be doing some work towards uncovering human rights abuses.
Well, thank you for your questions. On Liu Xiaobo, I want to start by just putting the facts straight. I was not invited by the Nobel Peace Prize organizers to the event that they are holding tomorrow. I also want to add that I was on mission in Jordan and arrived an hour ago. And of course, it's very important for me to be here with you. Let me now turn to the substance of your question. As you know, I did make a statement on 25th December last year, the day when he was sentenced to 11 years in prison, and I described the sentence as extremely harsh and raised questions about the fairness of the charges against him. It is my view that the case should be reviewed and Liu Xiaobo should be released as soon as possible. I hope that the Chinese authorities will come to recognize the positive contribution that peaceful advocates like Liu Xiaobo can make to China's development. And in this regard, I want to say how dismayed I am at the recent restrictions China has placed on an ever-widening circle of associates of Liu Xiaobo and other activists and critics, including his wife. In recent weeks, my office has received reports of at least 20 activists being arrested or detained, and more than 120 other cases of house arrest, travel restrictions, forced relocations, and other acts of intimidation. These include Liu Xiaobo's wife, Liu Xia, who remains under house arrest, a house arrest which, in my view, is in contravention of Chinese national law. I intend to continue holding a dialogue with the government of China on these cases. And of course, on Human Rights Day, I encourage the Chinese authorities, as well as all other countries, to release any person detained for peacefully exercising his or her right to freedom of expression. I also encourage all countries which have not done so as yet, including China, to ratify the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. So as I said, I'm engaged in a constructive dialogue with the government of China on all these matters, because that is one of the facets of my mandate, is to achieve something effectively for the individuals whose rights are violated. And of course, you asked me about WikiLeaks. I think that what's happening here, I mean, this is truly what media would call a cyber war. It's just astonishing what is happening. But let me say that the WikiLeaks case raises complex human rights questions about balancing freedom of information, the right of people to know, and the need to protect national security or public order. And this balancing act is a difficult one. Let me say Article 19 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights provides for the right to freedom of expression, which includes the right to seek, receive, and impart information and ideas of all kinds. While the right to seek, receive, and impart information may be restricted, restriction clauses must be A, necessary, and B, proportional, and must be provided by law, and should be justified strictly on the need to protect national security or public order. So who is best to judge or strike at the balance? But courts of law. Courts of law are equipped to address the delicate issue of balancing competing rights and values. If Mr. Assange has committed any recognized offense, then the judicial system following fair procedures should be able to address how these rights can be balanced. It is important to note that the current charges against him do not relate to leaked information. I am concerned about the reports of pressure exerted on private companies, including banks, credit card companies, and internet service providers, to close down credit lines for donations to WikiLeaks, as well as to stop hosting the website or its mirror sites. While it is unclear whether these individual measures taken by private actors directly infringe on states' human rights obligation to ensure respect of the right to freedom of expression, taken as a whole, they could be interpreted as an attempt to censor the publication of information, thus potentially violating WikiLeaks' right to freedom of expression. If WikiLeaks has committed any recognizable illegal act, then this should be handled through the legal system and not through pressure and intimidation, including on third parties. So I would say there is no clarity at the moment about the source of the cyber attacks and counter attacks. They nevertheless raise concerns about the effective protection that concerned states should provide in relation to the right of WikiLeaks founder to freely share information as required in Article 19.2 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. Now you did mention Iran. Was that in relation to the WikiLeaks disclosure? It was about Iraq
in relation to the WikiLeaks on Iraq.
Yes.
But yeah.
Well, obviously, we were very concerned when we read those documents. The files reportedly indicate that the U.S. knew, among other things, about widespread use of torture and ill-treatment of detainees by Iraqi forces, and yet proceeded with the transfer of thousands of people who had been detained by U.S. forces to Iraqi custody between 2009 and 2010. And in my view, this could potentially constitute a serious breach of international human rights law. I fully support all efforts being made by several independent UN experts, known collectively as special procedure mandate holders, who are seeking clarification from the U.S., from the Iraqi authorities and the Afghanistan authorities concerning the circumstances regarding the torture and ill-treatment described in the WikiLeaks documents. I urge all countries to take necessary measures to investigate the allegations made in these reports and to bring to justice those responsible for human rights abuses. Thank you for your question.
Yes, good afternoon. Jan Herbermann of Tagesspiegel in Berlin. I would like to follow up on Frank's question on the Nobel Peace Prize. Apparently, the Chinese authorities are asking states not to send delegations to the ceremony in Oslo. Others say they try to organize a boycott of this ceremony. My question is, have the Chinese authorities approached you directly or indirectly and asked you directly or indirectly not to attend this ceremony? Thank you.
Well, of course, I'm not aware of the Chinese approaching states, but let me say that member states approach us all the time because we are in constant dialogue with them. And let me repeat, I am in dialogue with the Chinese government over these matters. No pressure was exerted by them, even when I issued the statement that I did on 25th December. I asked for responses to the questions I raised about the nature of the charges and the sentence and urged that they release him. And, of course, urged, protested about the house arrest of his wife. So the nature of my work means that states constantly come to see me because they're anxious about what I'm about to say or what I will be saying. But the challenge of my mandate is to pursue a constructive dialogue with states while safeguarding the independence of my office. And I'm satisfied that I've stuck to those principles, generally and in this situation.
Madam, also on this case, we have seen in the council a very divided council, I would say. And we see now, for example, China even talking about giving its own human rights prize. Do you fear that actually this is leading to, let's say, a two-world divisive situation on human rights where some basically are denouncing a system and the others are simply saying, we don't care, we're going to have our own criteria to establish what human rights are? It's a personal view, but it's a personal view that if the Human Rights Declaration was going to be signed today, it would not be signed, the Universal Declaration.
Well, fortunately, 62 years later, we have a Universal Declaration that everybody has subscribed to, and no country has withdrawn from it, including China. About peace awards, you know, there are very many peace awards. Even governments award peace awards or awards generally to citizens of other states. I'm fully aware that in this particular instance, China has protested that this selection is political. So that's their point of view. I think that the rest of us, the world, we'll have our opinion on who gets awards. And in this particular case, Lun Xiaobo has written a document which has been welcomed as a document in support of democracy. So I should think we will eventually be the judge of whether awards being given by any country or any group is deserved or not.
Yes, good afternoon. Coming back to Iraq, I was wondering if you have any views on recent revelations and numbers by the Office of the High Commissioner for Refugees of the hundreds of Iraqis who are being forcibly expelled from Norway, Sweden, Denmark and the United Kingdom, in the case of Sweden, more than 600 in the last few months, going back to very hostile environment in Iraq.
Well, I don't have the figures with me at the moment. We will find it for you. Let me say that I just came from Jordan, where a very large number of Iraqis, known as guests, have a home in that country for very many years. And in my meeting with King Abdullah II, he explained how they have large numbers of Iraqi guests and Palestinian refugees for many years, and he explained the burden this is on the resources of the country. We watched the camp in Iraq, and very recently the head of MENA, my Middle East and North Africa office, in fact, he came back with me on this plane from Jordan. He went to the Ashraf camp, and he reported to me that it's really very, very complex in finding a solution, because UN refugees want these people quite naturally to come out of the camps so that they could interview them. So there's a little block there. I want to repeat that under refugee law and human rights law, people who are forcibly removed from their countries, in this particular case, Iraqis, are having their rights violated in being sent back to countries where they may potentially face torture, imprisonment, and even death. And this is what refugee law protects. And I see more and more, even from the movements you described, that these well-preserved laws are being violated, not only with regard to Iraqis, but generally even with irregular migrants who are being forcibly moved out. You know that in that context, I have advocated a human rights-based approach to migration, and of course it includes Iraqs and very many other people. I feel that a human rights-based approach places the migrant at the center of migration policies, and it pays particular attention to marginalized groups, such as unaccompanied children and victims of trafficking. So international law, as I said, is unequivocal about states' obligations to respect, protect, and to fulfill human rights without discrimination based on immigration or other status.
Yes, hi. I've got two questions, one specific and the other of a little more general nature. And the first regards the situation of women in Afghanistan specifically. There has been some reporting coming out now, which I would find laughable if it wasn't so disturbing, saying that for a long time people have been saying that the situation of women has improved so much since the Taliban was supposedly kicked out, and Western governments are beginning to be a little embarrassed that maybe it isn't so. So what is that situation in regard to the situation and condition of women, and is it acceptable the way it is? And then I have a question following that.
You know, we have a human rights advisor in Afghanistan, and we've been trying more and more to send more staff there, and the reason is exactly what you have raised, discrimination against women, which in my view is getting worse, and particularly women in the rural areas. We are monitoring the situation, and we file regular reports on this because we want the whole United Nations to have a first-hand account of the effects on women there. I'm very concerned that the protection of women seems to be neglected, and nobody is speaking about that in all kinds of political settlements that are being worked out in Afghanistan. And I've also had conversations with the head of the UN there, and he shares these concerns as well. I will continue to watch the situation in Afghanistan. And early next year, I'm unable to go, but the Assistant Secretary General, who heads my office in New York, Ivan Simonovich, will be undertaking a mission to Afghanistan. And one of his focus will be the situation of women, because the women's organizations working on Afghanistan's women's matters have approached our New York office and provided information about this.
If I, can I just add, just add something there. There's a report just been put out today, in fact, in Kabul by UNAMA in cooperation with OHCHR, which is on that issue. And I can send you the press release and link to that report after this press briefing.
My second more general question, and you started off the press conference by making a good resolution for next year. So I would like to ask you how you would assess the human rights situation over the past year, whether you think that it's worse, better, or about the same as it has been in previous years, and whether you detect any major or any particular trends, human rights violations, that have been emerging over the year?
I think it's pretty depressing, the extent of human rights violations, and that these come mostly at the hands of state actors. I raise them everywhere I go. I've been to Mexico, Bolivia, and now Jordan, in one after the other. And about getting worse, when I read a report like this, death in Guatemala yesterday, then I really think the situation is getting worse. But my main message is that we have mechanisms today to address these issues, to make states more accountable for their human rights violations. And one of them is the Universal Periodic Review. Many of the member states are currently in Bangkok considering the review, and I've, as you know, issued a non-paper because I want to bring more and more of these issues before the Human Rights Council. That is the only forum we have. So I feel we have a mechanism now that we didn't have before to name states and call for an end to impunity. Secondly, the Human Rights Council has established the special procedures, and they periodically, as you know, issue statements, and they keep a watch over these matters. I intend to do much more through our field offices and through the national human rights institutions. We have to consider how significant it is that more than 100 countries now have human rights institutions or ombuds offices. And I meet with them. I met with the National Human Rights Institution, for instance, in Jordan. And they are really taking up cases. They told me, for instance, they documented the cases of 22 Palestinians in Jordan who had existing documentation, and this has been removed. And I was able to immediately raise that in my meetings with the government. And of course, they said to me, no person holding documents has been subject to withdrawal. But there you are, a national human rights institution established by them has researched and documented this. I'm also very concerned about repressive actions taken against human rights defenders and journalists. We monitor and we keep track of them. Much of my work is done quietly because I'm very interested in having a person released. So therefore you would not know many of the initiatives taken by me, and let me emphasize, initiatives taken by the Secretary General himself. So we take up individual names, we pursue this at the high level, and we don't drop them, we go on and on. I'm very concerned about the judge in Venezuela, for instance, who gave a decision granting bail to a suspected drug dealer who then escaped to the United States, and she is now under arrest. I was very happy that for 2 years I have been focusing on the release of Judge Bitukan Mendoza. Well, you know the judge, I mean in Ethiopia. You don't? Well, she was sentenced to life imprisonment, and she started a little opposition party. And she came here to Europe And that's what offended the government, statement that she made here in Europe. So after 2 years in detention, she has now been released. And we also welcome the release of a journalist in Somalia by the president. So my long answer to you is, yes, the situation is not improving, and all of us then have to play a role to expose these. We pick up information from everywhere. We pick up information that you put out, and we strategize how best to act on these matters. So all I can say that in the end, if we had no mechanisms, I would feel despondent. But I feel we should make the best use of the avenues we have.
Yes, Catherine Fiancon-Bokonga for Fraternité Matin. This is a question on the situation in Côte d'Ivoire. I would like to have your opinion about the situation, and I would like to know if you have sent the message to President Gbagbo to ask him to respect the results of the presidential elections. Thank you.
Well, I have not sent that specific message because I'm working closely with the Secretary General on Côte d'Ivoire, and he had a few urgent meetings. And I'm aware that yesterday the Security Council, in its decision, supported the election results which the UN has endorsed of the opposition leader, Mr. Ouattara. How do you say it?
Ouattara,
yes. So I'm very concerned with the developments in Côte d'Ivoire. That's why I issued two statements, because our immediate concern is that civilians are being caught between these two groups, and therefore my statements were directed to both these leaders and about encouraging their supporters and candidates to go on out to the street and resort to violence. There were a number of deaths and injuries which we documented. And as you know, I reminded the two presidential candidates that they would be held accountable for acts of violence committed by their supporters. The head of the Côte d'Ivoire mission here came to see me and gave a full account of how he saw the situation in the north. But I repeated these warnings to him. I will continue to monitor the situation carefully. I hope that there will be a political solution soon to this. I think it's significant that the United Nations has come out openly endorsing the election result. So I'm sure you're following that. UNOC has reported several violent incidents perpetrated by the presidential security forces throughout the country, including the capital. And at the same time, the pro-opposition youth conducted street demonstrations that have led to a number of people being killed and wounded. And in the countryside, the inter-community tension is quite high and could degenerate further. That's part of our role, to be very, very alert to situations deteriorating where civilians will be at risk. Thank you.
Okay, we'll just take three more questions that I've got logged here. Marta was next, then here, and then...
Hello, Marta Hurtado, the FNews Agency, here. Yesterday there was a fire in a prison in Chile, and 81 inmates died. And I put like a comment about this case and as well about the situation in the prisons worldwide, because they are overcrowded, not only in developing countries, but as well in developed countries. Thank you.
Yes, I, watched on television the horrific pictures of the fire, and that almost 80 of the inmates were killed in that fire. And you are quite right. They were protesting about conditions in the prison. Now, I'm not fully conversant with the issues that they were raising, but generally, we work very closely and encourage working group on arbitrary detentions, and even the committee on CAT, on torture, visits prisons. I'm also encouraging that governments give carte blanche to national human rights institutions to make spot checks into prisons. Just some national human rights institutions have such a power. For instance, Jordan, that I've just freshly spoken with. So it's not only the conditions in Chile that we will now get down to investigate, and we will take up the matter with the government. Of course, this tragedy has happened. Our concern is now to make sure that the government investigates not only that prison, but all prisons in Chile to ascertain what were these conditions that the inmates were protesting against. They have a right to be held under humane conditions. They have a right to protest about ill treatment or inhumane conditions. So that should have been received by the government. They should not have now forcibly locked up these individuals.
Excuse me, in general, in the worldwide, the situation of the prisons, because it's not better in other parts of the world. It's like, even in my country, in Spain, all the prisons are overcrowded, and we are in Europe and a developed country. So if you can make a comment in general, what is the situation in the prisons? Thank you.
I agree with you that the prisons are crowded. You know, there are many ways of addressing this. I would look immediately into the conditions, and there we don't have access, but I'm going to be working very closely with the special rapporteurs and the working group on detentions who have the power to visit prisons. And I think I should then now assertively encourage states to invite this group to inspect their detention centers and their prisons. As a former judge, I also encourage the judiciary not to go for imprisonment as the only option of imposing penalties. There are more creative ways, if the prisons are crowded, not to send them in there. I'm concerned about prison conditions in very many countries. If DRC, for instance, where the state does not provide any food for the inmates. So generally, I thank you for raising the matter with me. I'm going to work with these with the working group and with special rapporteurs to follow this.
Thank you. I'm Maegawa, a correspondent for the Japanese newspaper Asahi. And I have a little bit specific, I want some little bit more specific assessment of China's recent activities against the background of that the government-led campaign not to attend the Nobel Peace Prize ceremony. Do you think this move, or in general, China's human rights records is going bad or worse or getting better or status quo as usual Chinese way of human rights improvement? Thank you.
Well, I have no comment on the position that China adopts with regard to this attendance at the Nobel Peace Prize ceremony that they're entitled to. My concern is to keep track of human rights violations in the country. Unfortunately, we do not have a presence in the country. We don't have an office. Mm. It's when we are present that we can better monitor incidents on a regular basis. But I gave you some of the immediate figures that concern me with regard to actions taken against human rights defenders and journalists. So I don't want to categorize the state of the human rights record. I would point you to the Universal Periodic Review that China underwent. And as you know, my office will be filing a human rights report at the next review. And therefore, we are urging that the review process even consider the implementation of recommendations undertaken by states at the UPR process. And I'm hoping that this will be the focus, implementation. and that will help us to follow up the record, the human rights situation in many countries.
Thank you.
Yes, just to remind Rupert, my name is Hidayat. And I represent Al-Ahram in Egypt. Madam High Commissioner, you spoke about your initiatives concerning journalists. I would like you a little bit to elaborate on three examples, for example, so that we can understand really what are you doing for the defense of journalists. And two, I might be mistaken, but it seems that your comments on the WikiLeaks were pre-prepared before the briefing. So if they are written, can you send them to us by email? Thank you.
What am I doing for journalists? Let me emphasize, I will continue to look after the rights of journalists. I have raised the situation of journalists wherever I am. It's a very, very important opportunity for me when I'm talking with governments, with the head of state. And it so happened that when I went to South Africa just for a lecture, and also when I was in Bolivia, the subject that was uppermost in those countries was the attempts by the executive to control the media. So in South Africa, I could not say much because I was not on mission, but in Bolivia, I did. And in my meeting with President Morales, explained that that's essential pillar of democracy is to have an free and independent media. And I understood the law that they are passing, which is to redress historical discrimination against indigenous people. And they were concerned about media continuing to stigmatize indigenous people and being scornful of the attempts by the indigenous government. So these are their concerns. I met with the media, and they, of course, would prefer to have a self-regulating body, which I encourage. So in two countries, South Africa and Bolivia, last month, that's where I spoke up for journalists. But always when I go on mission, I have the names, individual names. Even in Jordan, I had the names of two journalists who were in detention and was able to raise the issue by name of individuals who are there. And of course, we held a very good seminar. We invited journalists. And more recently, the special procedures had journalists over just to address this WikiLeaks kind of how journalists saw freedom of expression and self-control. Well, I don't know about it, too. It just happened. It was a special procedure together with my office. We will find for you a record of those minutes and of the meeting that was held.
Yeah, it was. I just thought it was actually a private meeting. But we did invite Akanu, and Akanu was represented at that meeting.
Thank you. Thank you very much for taking my question. It's about Mexico. I'm from Mexican News Agency. It's about Mexico and about impunity. As you know, a lot of journalists have been killed there, and a lot of human rights defenders, and there's a total impunity. No one has been accounted for that. And also this attack in Oaxaca. So I don't know where you were in Mexico, if you had more details about this, or if there were any promises from the government for you. And can I make a second question? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. And then about this WikiLeaks case, Mr. Assange was here at the United Nations, and I asked him, what if the United States doesn't want to do a deep, transparent investigation about what he denounces in the documents about Iraq? That is the same question that I do to you, is there going to be a need of an international investigation maybe, or another kind, if they are not going to do anything about it?
the United States investigate the disclosure of documents by him? No.
All the denounces about torture and about prisoners in Iraq, he asked to have an investigation of that. But I asked him, what if the United States doesn't want to make that investigation? So what is your opinion on that?
Your first question on Mexico, unfortunately, I went as head of the GMG, the Global Migration Group, to the migration conference, and not on mission, but I did meet with the president and the president's wife and some ministers, and said that I was coming back very soon to address these very serious issues, because the press in Mexico asked me about them as well. And so that's my promise. I'm now going to, you know, my mission was canceled by the government. I was going to go on mission and attend the migration conference. So the undertaking I extracted from the government is that I can reschedule the mission part of my meeting. Then I would go around and do a full check. But nevertheless, because we have a very big office in Mexico, we keep track of all these incidents you describe and more, and we are urging that they investigate. They told me that they are. They're working on these matters. That's what they told me. Now, with regard to exposures that we do, media does, NGOs, human rights defenders, now the big question is how to get accountability, how to get governments to investigate these things. So to me, that's part of the challenge of our work. In this particular case, it's the disclosures on torture that trouble me. I know that the special procedure mandate holders are following up on Guantanamo with the U.S. involvements there and Bagram, the prisons in Afghanistan. And that's why I addressed the question on torture. That concerns me as well, and we will check this information and urge governments concerned who are responsible to investigate them. I have in the past, whenever there has been serious violations, called for international independent investigations, and I'll continue to do that in this case.
Okay, thanks very much for coming, and our commissioner says she'll see you again soon. So.
Thank you very much.